A story now of the social cost of an economic promise, the price of pursuing a dream. This is the calculation for families who decide to leave Mexico and take their chances in the United States. And as we discovered earlier this month in the little town of Melanalco, about an hour outside of Mexico City, it is a cost that seems to be borne unfairly by the children of migrant families.
These children, they're having trouble staying in school. They're having trouble emotionally on both sides of the border. There are some lucky ones. But the overall picture is that the costs are too great of these family separations. And the ones bearing the load are the children.
That is Mexican-based social worker and advocate Ellen Calmus. The many barriers to entry in the United States mean that there are many scenarios where parents and children are separated. For instance, when illegal immigrants are deported, what happens to their children born in the U.S. who can stay even though their parents are sent back across the border? There are an estimated 5,000 children of deported parents in the foster care system. Jill Replogle from KPBS San Diego's Fronteras desk says children caught in the system enter a legal limbo where it can be almost impossible for parents to put their families back together again.
The parents that I reported on are not the norm. Children only get involved with the child welfare system usually if they were either already in the system for some reason, if there was an allegation, previous allegation of abuse or neglect, or if the parents are detained and they don't have anyone else to take care of the children. And these cases are always complicated. It's a long process. Parents have to do things like lots of therapy and drug testing in some cases and a series of things. They have to have visits with their kids. And if there's an international border involved and two sets of child welfare services because the parents in Mexico are working with the Mexican version of child welfare services, it's just doubly complicated and also long.
Well, you have the border complicating things and challenging things. You have the agencies on either side of the border challenging things. And then you have the whole approach to immigration in the United States and the deportation process, which makes it really, really difficult. Let's talk about the case of 24-year-old Tanya Velasquez.
Tanya lived in Anaheim, California for about 8 years. She crossed into the U.S. illegally in 2006. And she and her husband were stopped by officers and they found drugs on him. And Tanya admits that her husband did sell drugs. They didn't find anything on her. They were both put in jail. And she pled guilty to a misdemeanor possession for personal use. And she says her lawyer encouraged her to plead guilty. And let's listen to Velasquez.
I signed the paper because the lawyer told me I would get out of jail immediately. I signed because I thought I would be reunited with my daughter.
So this is something that isn't supposed to happen anymore. There was a case that went to the Supreme Court in 2010, Padilla versus Kentucky. And the Supreme Court found that criminal defense lawyers must tell their clients the immigration consequences of pleading guilty. Because in this case, she was immediately passed over to an immigration detention facility and put into deportation proceedings. If she had fought her case, this might not have happened. And there's another interesting thing about her case. She says that immigration agents forced her to sign her deportation paper. She says that they literally grabbed her thumb and made her put her fingerprint on this because she wanted to fight her case. She thought she could make a case to stay in the United States. This is as the ACLU of San Diego and Imperial Counties actually filed a lawsuit against the Department of Homeland Security last week for this type of practice, which is a pretty common allegation of deportees that they are coerced into signing over this voluntary deportation without understanding the implications of it. And the implications are they automatically face a 10-year bar to being able to apply to come back to the United States legally.
So tell me about this other couple you profiled, Maribel and Manuel.
Right. So first of all, those aren't their real names. They've had a difficult relationship with the Orange County caseworker who's handling their case. So they asked me not to use their names. They lived near Mission Viejo in Southern California, long-term residents. Manuel lived in the U.S. for 23 years, and his wife was there for 13 years. They have three U.S. citizen children, and they made a mistake. That's what they say. They stole some toys from a store shortly before Christmas in 2011. You know, they say they didn't realize how terrible the consequences might be. They were deported. Manuel's mother was given temporary custody of their children. And they've been trying to get their kids back. They live in Tijuana now. They've been trying to get their kids back for more than a year, I believe almost a year and a half now, which is an extremely long time in dependency cases. And here's Manuel.
We've done everything they've asked. They've asked us to go to therapy. We go. They ask us to get jobs. We're working. They ask us to get a home. Well, we have a place to live.
Manuel says that they've done everything that the social worker asked them to do. And the only thing that they're missing is family therapy, which is extremely hard to do when you live in two different countries. Family therapy happens in a room when you're together. And their case has been delayed and delayed. And they think that the caseworker that they've been working with is biased against Mexico, basically. You know, she sort of accused them of not doing things the right way, of being able to cut corners, you know, possibly by giving bribes or because they have friends in certain places. And I'm just going to play here a cut from Raquel Mesqua, who is a liaison from Children and Family Services of Orange County.
We work with the consulate very carefully, and we ask them, what about this city? What did the home study say? You know, what's the crime rate? Will they be employed? All those factors are considered.
And so this is interesting because it sounds like they do take into account things that are going on in Mexico, you know, what the crime rate might be like in the town that the child might be placed in. That doesn't necessarily mean that that affects the decision whether to place the child. And in fact, the woman from the Mexican consulate told me that that's not the case, that they usually do place these children, but it can prolong the case, which is, you know, just makes it very painful for parents.
Well, painful and Kafkaesque. You know, what's the scale of the children in this limbo, and how do you think the immigration bill might affect the status or these kinds of cases going forward?
The reform bill would do a few things. It has a pretty strong provision, and this was put in as an amendment to the bill that's on the floor now. It would address the problem beginning with detention. So it would require immigration agents to, first of all, ask a detainee if they have children and give them time to arrange childcare and give them, you know, some resources to do that, some phone calls. And it would also allow them to participate in family court hearings. It, you know, it has a provision in there that says that they should be allowed to fully participate in the dependency process. The other thing is it would give immigration judges and immigration agents the discretion to consider whether a U.S. citizen child would face hardship if the parent is deported. This isn't a huge difference from how it is now, but it is a difference, and it would give them a little bit more discretion to take that into account.
Jill Replogle from KPBS's Fronteras Desk reporting on the difficult stories of separation and possible reunification of families on both sides of the border. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here? And maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.